you're meeting me in the moment, I am much higher, I am much more likely to convert. And that's where Adobe Experience Platform and the Edge network and the timeliness of signals becomes impressive, because when you do it right, you can actually intercept them in their purchase funnel at the exact right moment, and it's lucrative. Like it's very effective.
Hello, and welcome to the Funnel Podcast, a digital experience podcast by Blue Acorn ICI. Each month, we'll uncover new strategies and topics to improve digital experiences. I'm your host, Sarah G. I'm the Senior Content Marketing Manager here at Blue Acorn ICI. We're on part three of our four-part series, Adobe Experience Platform Across Industries, and this month's focus is retail and finance. If you've been a longtime listener of the show, you may already know that Chase Brooke is a frequent flyer on the podcast and brings a wealth of experience across a variety of industries. If you're not familiar with Chase, let's learn a bit more about him. He's a strategic leader in data and analytics with deep expertise spanning marketing, technology, and customer data. He's helped major retailers unlock the value of their customer insights to drive measurable business outcomes. And over the past 7 years, Chase has held a variety of leadership roles at Blue Acorn ICI, where he now focuses on pre-sales solutions consulting and data and analytics, where he bridges strategy and execution to deliver impactful business results. And now that you know a little bit more about Chase, let's chat with him. Well, hey, Chase, thanks for joining me to talk more about Adobe Experience Platform and your overall expertise.
Anytime, Sarah. Thrilled to be here.
Yeah. And I know we're going to be touching on a lot of industries that you have experience in, like retail and finance. And I've kicked off each episode of this series asking the other two guests kind of the same question of, and I'm going to ask you that as well. What are some of the biggest challenges for these industries and like what's holding them back from creating personalized experiences?
Yeah. Great question. And I'll try and stay focused in both finance and retail.
Okay.
I think there's some threads that connect, but there's also some discreteness between them that is worth mentioning. But yeah, so it's all coming back to data. The data story is ever present. In both those sectors, data is incredibly important to drive a personalizing experience, and it's incredibly important to drive an accurately personalized experience. On the finance side, whether that's marketing related, where you're trying to upsell or cross-sell into someone expanding their credit card line or creating an account, I would call that sort of more traditional marketing and technology data management, where you have to have good governance around what you're collecting, how you're collecting, and how you're using it to go out and talk to customers. My personal experience on the finance side was actually in risk management, and I was doing a lot of work for Basel II, which is a risk management sort of governance model that came out during the financial crisis in 07, 08, and
Interesting.
09. And yeah, what I learned there is this wasn't really about, it's kind of where I fell in love with data, but this wasn't about selling stuff or optimizing. It was about collecting data points related to your credit risk that you could then use to model to understand if you have enough liquidity to handle black swan style cataclysmic market events. So it was extremely important that the data was
Wow.
accurate, and the amount of data was enormous. It's like, millions and millions and millions of rows of credit data across the financial product lines. So from that context, I basically learned how to think about big data, why data accuracy matters, and it's for many, many reasons. And then I used to kind of go over and talk to the PhD level quantitative economic the professors basically that would use the data to run the Monte Carlo models. And just from an experience, I was 22, and it was just so intriguing to see essentially the value of data and how it is used by brilliant minds to mitigate risk for, large banks. That's where I got my start with data. Then you
Wow.
shift into this world of content and commerce and experience. The rules are generally the same. The stakes are a lot lower, I'd say, but you're still focused on accuracy, data collection, and governance. You just want to say, my personalized email is going to Chase Brooke, not first name, last name, right? You don't want to commit the sins of personalization from that perspective. And obviously that's a much bigger, and that is the eyes on the prize in the retail sector. So I did a lot of work with Casper Mattresses, a lot of work on optimization in terms of both product and user experience. And it's about, do I know what the customer needs? Can I talk to them in the right way? And then for Casper, which is interesting, what is the competition doing in terms of trying to eat my lunch? And is there data I can use to play defense and build a bit of a moat to protect myself from death by a thousand cuts of competition?
Interesting. Yeah. So I guess, were there any like hesitancies from like the finance side with using certain aspects of data? Or like, hey, maybe we don't do that just because of all the regulations?
It was more that on the finance side, it was just very controlled environment, which I find interesting when you kind of juxtapose it to some of the wild, wild west of data collection on the web and third-party cookies, right? The environment is very, very controlled. And a lot of that just has to do with compliance. So from that perspective, it was just about like precision, absolute precision, and absolute rationalization of sizing. So if I went and said, hey, here's a bunch of risk records, and this says there's $7 billion in risk, I'm going to get a bunch of questions that I need to be able to defend as it goes into the model. So that was much more just about it's kind of like a you're operating in an OR for the finance side, and on the retail side, you're kind of like out there playing paintball or something, right? Like the stakes aren't that high, but you still want to be accurate. You still want to, make it fun, and you still have the mission of essentially delighting your customers. On one side, it's delighting your customers by not having your bank go insolvent. And on the other side, it's delighting your customers by giving them incredibly personalized content, meeting them in the moment with the user experience, and fundamentally just listening to what they're telling you through a data collection machine that you believe in and is accurate.
How clunky was data collection back when you were working in either of those industries, or like what technologies were you working with?
Yeah, I'll stick mainly in retail because in the earlier days it was before tag managers, I call it 2011-ish, 2012, it was clunky because everything was essentially hard-coded, which means when I want to collect information about behaviors online, I need to write that code on, into the code base, and it's on. It's sitting there. And so while that's fine and it works on day one, it probably works on day 30, where it starts to break is when other site changes occur and those hard-coded tags break. They're essentially a bit more brittle and they're very focused on elements on the page. So you would get more tag breaks, you'd get more inaccuracies, tags would lose data and you wouldn't know for a very long time. It was just early in the days of analytics. The other thing that I find interesting about those times is attribution was really becoming a hot topic. It's still a hot topic, but even way back then when data collection was semi, like it was effective, but it wasn't the most advanced. We were really focused on attribution, right? The sequence of touch points that leads to the highest percentage of a good outcome, like the highest conversion rate. And so we were doing things to try and grab that data and stitch that data and tell these stories. These were also the ages of, every magazine that you looked at had big data on the cover. Like these are the big data glow up was occurring in 2011, 2012. And what's funny is it was occurring, but it's essentially big data that's full of garbage. So you get enamored, like, cool, I got this big pile of stuff. I'm rich. And then you look at the stuff and it's 80 to 90% trash. You're not only are you not rich, but you now have a big problem on your hands of what to do with it and how to sift through it. And I'd say for the last 10 years, from 2012 into like, 2020, the 2020s, it hasn't been about big data. It's been about the right data. And
An
that's
action on
where
that data.
Tagmint and actioning that data and having it be timely. And so that's where things have evolved from. We don't hard code tags anymore. We use tag managers, which is kind of a liaison between what is the web data tell me, and then what's going into my analytics platforms. This is really big for Adobe Experience Platform, right? So it is through the Web SDK data collection methodology, AEP will help pick up real-time signals online, bring them through the edge network in real time, and place those signals into the Adobe Experience Platform, whether that's on your profile attribute. Chase did something that is important to his profile. Maybe I fall into a new audience because I clicked on a lead gen form, or I downloaded a white paper. So now that signal is going to flow in real time to my profile and allow that profile to be sent to different destinations for marketing. So it's just really advanced on the pickup and the delivery of the data set, and then just the trust and the accuracy that it's a good signal. Because to your point on the activation front, in the early days when it was more of like, do I understand what's happening? There weren't as many levers to actually go out and be outbound super quickly. In these days, that lever is almost instantaneous, so it really gets back to governance and accuracy. As we get more sophisticated, as we collect data faster, we also have to be more controlled in the governance and the protection of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Touching on retail a little bit. So, obviously, with the pandemic and shopping habits online and just the growth of the retail space in general, where do you think retail is going in the next 5 years? Or, like, what should brands do with their data differently that they're not doing now? And how can Adobe Experience Platform potentially help with that?
Great question. And I don't think you can possibly even think about this without mentioning AI or LLMs,
Fair.
because it's just so interwoven now in the retail story and basically in all the stories. But the couple things that are just always going to be kind of through lines is retailers have to know what their customers want. They have to believe in the products they create, and they have to create great products, right? Like I always find it funny when it like kind of a garbage website, but has a great product and it just sells and sells and sells. I almost think about Reddit, right? Like if you think about the UI of Reddit, which is like if you feel like you're in 1989 or whatever,
Oh,
but
yeah.
it's because the product's so good. You don't have to play these games. You can stick to the essence of your product if it is exceptional. So don't forget that. Like don't ever like let that walk on you because you're so enamored by glitzy and glamorous user experience on web or app. But if you do those things, you also have to be playing at a high level digitally because your competitors are. So you need to have extreme data controls. Adobe Experience Platform is fantastic for doing that, which essentially allows you to have, they're called XDM schemas. So you can have standardized structure for how you ingest data. There's privacy and security really embedded in AEP, which gives you that peace of mind for protecting personal information and gives you a lot of options for what to do with it. And then because I think the key word is structured. It is structured data with intent. And when you have that and you've done it well, you're essentially enabling yourself to do stuff with it, whether that's marketing stuff, whether that's churn mitigation, whether it's just kind of surprise and delight customer engagement and you're increasing lifetime value. It's that's the jump. AEP is really good at helping you get to that jump because once you've stood up AEP, which is think about it as a data lake with all these intelligent services, then you'd use other applications that are sourced from AEP, such as the Adobe Real-Time CDP, Adobe Journey Optimizer, or Customer Journey Analytics that really start to give you all that value because you have a calm, cool, collected, structured data environment. So it's not easy, right? Like if I think about all the things I just said, you kind of have to be semi-excellent across the board. But then again, we're talking about best-in-class enterprises and brands, Casper Mattresses, Weber Grills, Le Creuset, Ulta Beauty. If you're going to play in that space, you're going to have to, advance your business to do what your competitors are doing.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I know we've had you on the podcast before, and you talked about a previous experience where before something like Adobe Experience Platform, there would be like floors of people just managing data for certain things. And now with this technology, it's really just like just one floor of people managing all of the things that like a whole building used to manage, right?
Yeah, I mean that still blows my mind. I kind of continue to tell that story because some of this is a cloud story, but it's also really just a an industry-wide evolution towards data management, and the tools and the capabilities have gotten to a place where something like AEP can exist, and a lot of that infrastructure, the real-world server racks and floors doesn't need to exist anymore. But I don't want that to sound like it doesn't mean like there's quite a bit of support and implementation and maintenance and work required. There's still a lot of management to ensure that you're doing all the right things. It just kind of is decentralized and it is more efficient. It is an aggregate, less of a sort of generic effort required. But what generally happens, you might have a simplified home base, but your capabilities and your customers expect more. So you're kind of fighting the bleeding edge of having to drive more sophisticated capability sets while you're gaining efficiencies on the back end. So like the march is never over. It's just reallocating where the bigger challenges are.
Totally. That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, once customers have some expectations set, they're only going to want more and more in the future as everything else progresses, where you have to stay up with that, with your competitors, with just the industry trends in general.
It's crazy. I mean, I just got a new iPhone and it's cool. I like it. I'm not blown away. But if I had gone from like, if the first iPhone I had ever used or the first smartphone I had ever touched was this iPhone 17, I would feel like I'm living in the year 3000. We just get so watered down with the incredible technology that we have already.
Switching gears a little bit to finance and picking your brain there, what do you see as far as trends in this industry, or like what parameters does the financial industry need to keep in mind when creating better digital experiences and more personalized experiences that we haven't touched on already?
I'll leave the risk management stuff behind and talk more about optimization. A couple of interesting notes. I think the first one is that traditionally you need to be doing all the same kind of retail product level optimization tactics pre-login to drive new account signups. So all the things that you would do to try and sell me an iPhone, you should be doing to get me to sign up a new account at Bank of America. That is hitting me where I am on my devices. That is knowing enough about myself as a customer to give me a compelling offering. The personalization is really important in that space to get account signups. So pretty traditional where data and accuracy is king. And then like the other sectors, frequency and recency, right? So how often are you contacting me? How frequently, are you contacting me, and how relevant is it is really, really important. And there's these edges, right? Like it's kind of like you've gone from me being intrigued to me being annoyed, and you really kind of want to model those edges if you can to figure out the right frequency of those touch points. So then let's say it works. Wow, I got the right message at the right time on my new iPhone, and I need a new checking account, so I signed up. They did it. Like that is it. Their campaign has a conversion. We're going to increment the numerator by one. Our conversion rate is going up. The thing I'm seeing, and I find a little bit more intriguing also, is there's becoming more attention to rewarding the existing customer because of the cost of acquisition.
Yep, that
So
makes sense.
once they have me, like surprise and delight, because it's cheaper than going out to acquire a net new customer. So essentially, things that use data for post login, my dashboards, my account views, my user experience once I'm logged in, those are becoming more pressing. Which is interesting because it's always been a little bit like, oh, we got them, let's move on to the next one. And I think most companies are getting very aware of lifetime value and using AEP and using the CDP to work to mitigate churn.
Yeah, it's like the juice for the squeeze analogy. They're really starting to pay attention to that one.
It's really true.
Were there any aha moments from either like retail clients or finance clients of like, wow, AEP, I see the value because of this, or like, oh, this is what it can really do, and why they kind of leaned on that technology for their data and personalization.
I think the most cutting edge stories are generally in retail, and the aha isn't necessarily about what's happening. I think it's actually more back to timing.
Okay.
You know, it's about we are fickle. We have low attention spans. Feel like if you actually studied your buying behavior, you should be like, man, I don't know. Like, what am I like? What actually triggered me to do that?
I don't want to
So,
know.
exactly, it's like you're kind of peering into the into some scary psychology. But the one thing we do know is that if you present a message to me, SMS, push, email, a pop-up, whatever, and it's you're meeting me in the moment, I am much higher, you know, I am much more likely to convert. And that's where Adobe Experience Platform and the Edge network and the timeliness of signals becomes impressive, because when you do it right, you can actually intercept them in their purchase funnel at the exact right moment. And it's lucrative. Like it's very effective. It takes an enormous amount of effort to kind of manifest that capability, and then a lot of testing to get it right. But to me, that's the aha. Kind of a little story is that I remember when Google Analytics brought in a real-time capability to their dashboards, where you could essentially sit there and look at how many sessions are on my site, how many visits, how many page views. And any kind of true analyst, we kind of quickly laughed about it, because there's no real purpose in seeing real-time information other than like, hey, that's a cool story, but like, what am I going to do? Cause I see 100 people visiting, you know, last second. So there was kind of a bit of an
and
eye
now what?
roll related to it. Exactly. Like, neat. We basically used it for testing, right? Like I could put a query string parameter on myself, go onto a website and see if I, and then use real time to see if I saw my query string parameter, so I could do it for tracking testing. Now, with capabilities like the Edge network in real time, it does matter. It can't, it's not necessarily about like, I'm going to make this wholesale change, but it's more about this customer did something where timing matters, and I can go out through automated tools and AEP and have them receive a text message for something, whether, you know, an upsell, a cross sell. I can have a discount. You know, that we talk about next best action, NBA, or next best offer, NBO. Those are aha moments, because again, when done right with the right data to the right audience at the right time, highly effective. But
oh,
I'm
yeah.
kind of built. It's like I'm built. If you just, I hear myself talk, and it's like you have all these prerequisites that have to be done right to then just essentially hit Sarah with the text message at the right moment. So it's not like a, you know, it's not a necessarily an easy task, but the capabilities are there and the big enterprises are doing it.
Yeah. And the impact from the customer too, of like, oh, okay, great. This was actually, my brain was just pinging to this random thought and you guys caught me right in that moment. Like you're saying, our search history or whatever's all over the place is like, wow, they really got me right here in these 3 seconds. I was thinking about this one thing. So yeah, I'm in.
Well, in your mind. Yeah. And your the crazy mind will somehow convince yourself that it was your idea in the first place.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
I was always going to do that.
Duh.
Yeah. And that's actually an interesting psychology area too, right? If you actually go back and do, you know, you do user testing, or you ask people about it, there's a lot of fuzziness into why people behave the way they do. And what I find interesting is when you aggregate it and you roll it up and you don't look at one person, you look at 30 million of them, that's when you actually see the correlations and you can actually start to build campaigns, because you have statistical significance in the aggregate, not in the craziness of the individual.
Totally. Are there any other points you want to bring up about the benefits of AEP or any other learnings that you've found within these two industries before we wrap today?
I would just say, you know, AEP is evolving. AEP is incredibly powerful and nuanced, but it is a blank canvas that requires the appropriate customization and setup. And so, you know, you have to do it the right way to get the right outcomes. I think most big brands and most brands understand that. And then it's really, to me, both retail and finance, it's about a strategic roadmap where AP is not for the short-minded thinkers or narrow-minded planners. It is for the long-term planners that understand investment, that understand ROI takes time, but you build on it. And I think the brands that are doing it the best are going to see pretty tremendous returns in 3 to 5 years or less, but they certainly didn't have those returns on year one,
Oh,
or
yeah.
on year zero during implementation. So I just encourage a longer perspective and a bigger view. And then I didn't talk about the AI portion, but when you structure data, so insert AEP, it's great at it. You allow AI and LLM to feast in a happy and structured way and pull that back to ChatGPTs or whatever. And so if you are treating your data right, the LLMs are going to treat you right, and you are going to see traffic now flow from ChatGPT to your retail. And anecdotally, the data that we see coming from your LLMs in terms of conversion rate is much higher than search. So this
Question,
is
and
like search plus.
sorry, and for those who might not be familiar, LLMs stand for.
Large language models. So these are the super expensive giant data centers and warehouses that are scraping the entire body of the internet, and essentially teaching themselves to be generative in their response. And by generative, I mean essentially they're using probability, and they're using the historic body of everything any human has ever written online to make the best decision they can on the next word. And when all that comes together, kind of magically, you get very sophisticated, intelligent outputs to your messy questions, including what's the best pair of Nike shoes? Or what ski resort should I go to in April? And that is where retail is going to explode in terms of customers having really intelligent ways to do research. And so the data sets have to be pristine if the retailers want to be seen.
Yeah. Really great insights, Chase. Thank you so much. I always learn so much when I speak with you offline, and then when you join these episodes, I'm like, "Oh yeah, duh, makes so much sense." And I just love picking your brain when it comes to Adobe Experience Platform. You're just a huge wealth of knowledge.
Oh, thanks so much, Sarah. I definitely enjoy these chats. And yeah, I think the data world, the optimization world, whether you're looking at financial risk in Ireland or trying to sell the next mattress, a lot of those foundational elements are the same. And most of it comes down to just best practice and planning.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining today. We'll see you on part four of this series, but it's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sarah.
If you've enjoyed this episode of The Funnel and all the insights we've shared, share it with your friends. To learn more about Chase, check out the links in our show notes for more information. Until next time.